Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business. Experiencing a little bit of technical difficulties, but we are back on the air, and Neil Stratton appears to be with me. How's it going, Neil?
Doing great, Justin. I guess a little bit better than Blog Talk Radio is doing today, but that's okay. I'm glad we're back on the air and back and rolling.
There we go. So, football was back as far as last night. Finally got kicked off with the cancellation of the Pro Football Hall of Fame game on Sunday. Now there appears to be a class action lawsuit against the Pro Football Hall of Fame regards to all they were going to do is refund the tickets. And people, wanted their travel, different things refunded there. I actually happened to be down for the induction ceremony. Have been down to the Hall of Fame a number of times. Saturday down at the Hall of Fame, went to the inductions with my brother. Had a good time there, but I can definitely understand the frustration with people that traveled, a long ways away to go to, the Hall of Fame and go to the Hall of Fame game. A ton of people were down there from Green Bay or that Wisconsin region. So that's a long drive there from them. So what's your thoughts in regards to, hey, the class action lawsuit, should they had it with the game, and where do we go from here?
Well, if you read the details of kind of how everything played out, it doesn't reflect exceptionally well on the NFL. It looks like the decision had been made quite a bit before the actual announcement that the game was canceled, that it would be canceled. And there were a number of probably issues that could have been avoided, and ultimately, it's a PR black eye for the NFL, and there are certainly a lot of people that were impacted by this in a negative way. I'm certainly not an attorney, and I can't comment on the merits of the case per se, but, again, it doesn't look good, but I think ultimately it's not anything that's going to have any kind of lasting impact on the NFL. It's one of those things that kind of travels through the news cycle and then find its way out, and maybe in a year or two or whatever, if this thing actually plays its way through the legal system, we'll hear some more about it. But, right now it's kind of something that was certainly unfortunate and again, didn't look so good in news stories, but ultimately won't have a lot of impact on the way the game was played and what happens going forward. I mean, at this point, we started the preseason, and even though it's just exhibition football and doesn't count for anything, it's still kind of an indication that football's in the air, and it won't be too long before we're ready to go on a 17-week season again. So I think this will be overcome rather handily by the NFL, and they'll be able to keep it out of it if they can kind of move on from it and keep it from continue to leave a bad taste in people's mouths.
Yeah, definitely. They basically said, hey, they were going to refund the tickets, which would cost them $7 million, there. I think the biggest thing was it was an embarrassment on a standpoint of not just the money, but the paint. They're doing all this renovation. It's a $500 million project down there with the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's a great facility there. Tom Benson, the New Orleans Saints owner, had donated the field, the turf there, to put down there, and then they screw it up with some paint. I mean, I just think that's just ridiculous, on a standpoint of, hey, how don't you test that? Obviously, Troy Vincent, kind of fell on the sword and said, hey, it's my responsibility. I need to, take care of this. It's my fault there. So, definitely, like you said, a black eye. I don't think we'll have any lasting effect. They said, hey, the Pro Football Hall of Fame game is going to be there next year, and it's something that they want to keep there. And, it's always a great weekend. They just kind of had a little bit of egg on their face here with the game going on there. But definitely, as far as money-wise, it's going to cost the NFL or the Pro Football Hall of Fame, some cash. But, right now the NFL is printing money, so it won't be that big of an impact.
Exactly. Yeah.
Another thing that kind of have came up, and I don't, I know that you had said in the past you hadn't watched Hard Knocks, but I'm a guy who's been a big fan of Hard Knocks. I thought this year the episode that just came out Sunday had a couple of interesting things in there, and the things that's been in the media. One in regards to it showed I think, a sad standpoint of the Rams basically moving from St. Louis and their offices, you know, and their facility, basically just pulling everything out and just kind of, you know, it's going to be a ghost town in that facility, depending on what, you know, Stan Kroenke and the city of St. Louis and they decide to do there. But it also showed, hey, you know, the cutting of Nick Foles, and basically was a phone call from Coach Jeff Fisher, you know, to him, and hey, how's the family? You guys, you know, things. Hey, we're going to do this today. You're released. And I think the bigger interesting thing for fans and for, you know, people that want to be in this business in regards to agents and players, and, you know, is that Deion Long, wide receiver who was a priority free agent 2 years ago, had bounced a lot of different schools. You know, one of the rules, basically, you know, Fisher said, hey, we got a couple of rules: be on time and no female guests, you know, in the dorms, or, you know, a year from now you'll have a 3-month, you know, old, you know, coming, you know, watching you practice. So, you know, and, you know, Deion Long, he, you know, broke the rules, and it wasn't, hey, you know, if we're going to hold you out or we're going to fine you or anything like that. You know, he, you know, Jeff Fisher just went and released him, you know, and I think basically a lot of people, you know, had said, hey, that's, you know, it was cold hard, but at the end of the day, if you're a practice squad, priority free agent type guy, you don't get a lot of shots. You can't break the rules. Now, if that was Jared Goff, the number one overall pick, would that have been, you know, would he have gotten released? No. But I think that just shows, you know, what the NFL is. It's a business, and it's the coach's world. The teams, you know, rule with iron fists on some of those things, and you got to kind of toe the company line. So, have you heard anything? You know, did you watch it? Have you heard any, as far as media rumbling, you know, about the Hard Knocks episode and what happened with Deion Long?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting because so many players don't understand where they fit in the team hierarchy. And I think it's possible, in my observation, that that's become more commonplace in the last decade, maybe last two decades. Maybe players don't have a sense of really how precarious their spot on the roster really is, and sometimes until it's too late. And they tend to act out or do things the way they want to do things rather than not realizing they're taking an incredible risk. I remember reading in one of Skip Bayless' books on the Cowboys that were published probably 20 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever, that when Jimmy Johnson had a player who was fringe, into the roster type, who break rules, and he was gone immediately. He took glee in saying that if Emmitt Smith fell asleep in a meeting or Troy Aikman would, he'd come over and kind of pat him on the back and whisper in his ear to wake up. But if it's a player who's on the fringe of the roster, you don't do that. I mean, you just get rid of them. And I think there are a lot of players who don't understand that that they are on the fringe of the roster, especially in the days of 90-man rosters when, you know, there's lots and lots of fat. And by the time we get to the regular season, almost half the roster will be cut anyway. I know for a fact that I spoke to an official with the Texans a few years ago. And he had a player who was constantly being caught in the situation. He'd go in there and find the residue of having women in his room overnight, shall we say, and different things, and he'd have to clean those things up. But the guy was a third rounder and a player that the team was counting on. And so he would bring the guy in and have some stern sessions with him, but there was never any discussion of cutting him are getting rid of him because he was a third rounder. I mean, he's a top 100 pick. He wasn't a guy they could just throw away. On the other hand, we have Deion Long, who is a guy that is imminently disposable. We had, you know, I guess these kind of examples are coming up all the time, but even with the Cardinals, there was a player who showed up, parked in the wrong parking space, happened to be Bruce Arians' space, and his butt was gone too. So I'm hopeful that if there are players out there that are listening to this, or maybe people are coming up that hope one day to make it onto the NFL roster, I hope that those people realize how tough it is to make an NFL roster and how they've got to be minding their P's and Q's at all times and how important it is not to make stupid mistakes like bringing a girl into the room when your head coach tells you not to. I mean, I could see where I didn't see the episode, but having read about it, it seems like something that really set Jeff Fisher off. And when you're 89 or 90 on a 90-man roster, you don't want to give the head coach a reason to be set off. So I think, honestly, at the end of the day, Long probably cost himself a few weeks on the roster. Who's to say if he would have made the roster, probably unlikely. And he was able to rebound and land with the Eagles, but hopefully he won't make the same mistake with the Eagles that he made with the Rams.
Yeah, and I think it's just a cautionary tale to, hey, if you are an agent, you know, to try to basically, you know, reference the Deion Long, you know, rule of, hey, it's, you know, it's a rule, same with, like you said, the Bruce Arians things. You know, hey, if you're not a first-round pick, you know, there, and even if you're a first-round pick, you know, eventually, you know, there, you can get to be expendable, whether it's your play or your attitude or you're not following the rules. And so, hey, it is the, you know, it is the head coach and GM, you know, world, and you're just living in it, and you got to be able to try to take advantage and kind of, you know, toe the company line. So
sure,
that's definitely, it's been interesting to see what Sunday happens, you know, there with the episode 2 of Hard Knocks, and that'll be a, you know, another interesting thing, and we'll see what pops up there. So now, kind of get into a meat of something that happened this week. You know, I don't know if it caught people off guard, you know, because we had the meeting in February at the NFL Combine, the NFLPA rule basically saying, okay, hey, are you going to go to, you know, from 3% to 2%? That was kind of the, you know, underwhelming thought there. Hey, it was going to drop down to, you know, kind of the agent fee down to 2%. And then they went to Hawaii, they voted on it, they said, nope, we're just, you know, we're going to table it, we're going to keep it at 3%. And then this week, you know, the Liz Mullen, basically, from, you know, the Sports Business Journal, had a said, okay, hey, the new standard representation agreement will include a standard fee that would be 1.5%, a default fee. So basically that compels agents to say, hey, you know, we want a maximum of 3%, you know, or to try to negotiate that. You have had on your Succeed in Football blog a couple posts about this. I've had, you know, agents in the business, you know, had kind of contacted me and said, hey, what do you think about this? You know, and I think we all need to kind of wait and see, okay, hey, how's the SRA going to be, you know, set up there? And then, you know, again, I think this is something we've talked about before, you know, on this show, is that really the NFLPA is trying to push out all the kind of the part-timers, the fringe guys, and they just want the CAAs, the Joel Siegels, the Drew Rosenhauses, the guys who represent the majority of guys to be in this business, and all the attorneys who have it part of their practice, you know, there, you know, to basically, you know, get pushed out of this business. You know, I know you just talk with a lot of agents, a lot of your clients are agents, and this is affecting them. What do you think it's going to do, and what do you think it's going to do for the business as a whole in regards to trainers, you know, and how that maybe will trickle down to the trainers in regards to the pre-combine training? And, you know, again, we've saw Russell Okung go without an agent. We saw Jacoby Brissett, who was a third-round pick by the New England Patriots, who played last night. He does not have an agent. Do you think we're going to see more of that? What do you think is going to – what's going on here with this in general, Neil?
Well – I'll try to take all those one at a time. Let's start with the trainers. I think the initial reaction from a lot of the agents that we spoke to was, if players are going to expect training, and in almost every case now, players do expect training, they're going to have to be willing to go to 3%. Now, will agents be willing to stand behind that and really push on it? I don't know. I think the ones that are good, the mid-sized firms, the smaller agencies that are kind of new to the business but have had some success and are doing things the right way, will hopefully value themselves and they will hold to that standard. I mean, if you're looking at spending $10,000 to $15,000 on a player with no guarantees whatsoever, in as volatile a business as the NFL is, when players can be cut at all times and no one truly knows the value of a player until after the draft, then you've got to have quite a bit of expendable cash sitting around to be able to throw around $10,000, $15,000, even $20,000 to train players with no guaranteed expectation of a return on your investment. So my guess is that that's the direction things are going to go. And so there may be fewer players, especially if they want to hold that 1.5, that are getting training. And that's going to maybe lend some trainers have to be a little more creative about things and may ultimately even move some people out of business. The thing about the business is for trainers, it is such a sexy business. It is such a good way to sell your business to the high school athletes in your area and even the adults that want to lose a little weight on, you know, and are willing to join your facility because you've got jerseys on the wall. That's a big selling point, a big marketing piece. The overhead for combine trainers, the really good ones, the ones that are working with players year in and year out, is pretty high, and the margins aren't nearly as big as a lot of people think they are. So this is going to have an impact on the trainers that I think we're still kind of have to weigh and kind of figure out. It's also, I mean, I think the narrative has developed, and perhaps inside the league has been a part of this, that the NFLPA doesn't necessarily want agents anymore, or perhaps they're trying to ease out the ones that they don't feel are fit for the business, and I think you alluded to that already. The timing of this, doing it in August, making it a big public splash, and giving agents the chance to look at this and really weigh things about 45 days before the deadline for dues for the 2016-17 season is unmistakable in my mind. I mean, I guess it's a good thing that they've done this now excuse me, and given agents that option, whereas if they had done it in October, November, then agents would have already signed on for the next season and would find themselves kind of trapped if they didn't feel like the odds were in their favor anymore. But again, I think this is something that's coming on the heels of how difficult they've made the test, coming on the heels of, you know, the constant chatter that they're going to raise the dues fees. And then this, again, really plays into that narrative that the NFLPA doesn't want to have 800 agents anymore. Maybe they want 300 or 400 or somewhere along that line. I mean, there are about 200 to 250 agents that really do the business of the agent world and the business of the NFL consistently, and then another, you know, 500 or so that may get the odd player here and there, but they're certainly not as their sole source of income, and maybe it's really more of a hobby, an expensive hobby for them, something that I call real-life fantasy football. And maybe they're trying to get those people out of the business. Maybe they're trying to make this a business for people who are solely dedicated and not for, you know, maybe what you'd call enthusiasts anymore. I don't know. I can't speak to what the NFLPA wants to do exactly. They continue to maintain their NFLPA financial advisor program, which in my estimation hasn't been a success, in that almost every time a financial advisor is censured, that guy's already part of the program and they only get rid of him after the news breaks across the internet. So I think they're making, maybe the NFLPA is making some decisions on how they want things to go, and they're taking their cue from the players, of course. But I think ultimately, in my mind anyway, the more people that are out there, the better off players are and the more options the players are. And I don't know, Justin, ultimately I think this is not a good thing for the agent business. I think that unlike a lot of maybe what the wave is right now, and maybe unlike what a lot of parents believe or even, and certainly schools, I think that there are good agents out there. I think that being an agent is not an easy job. I think there is a place for agents in the game. I think that agents are a net benefit for players. And when you start erasing agents because they can't make money in this business, and a business that has a questionable business model already is suddenly cut in half as far as what you can make, I don't know how you can look at that and say objectively, this is good for agents, this is good for football, this is good for players. I really don't. If you only care about the top 150 players, top 200 players, or maybe you only really care about the top 50 in each draft, then it's not going to make that much decision. But, you know, look at how all the alternative leagues that are set up to try to improve players that are kind of on the fringes consistently fail. And look at how, you know, of course, the NFL doesn't invest in them. And then you look at how the NFLPA is making it harder to operate as an agent. I don't know how you can make any other conclusion except that the top players are going to have to going to succeed and have success and have all the advantages, and it's getting harder and harder if you're a fringe player and if you're a kind of a fringe contract advisor. It's getting harder and harder to succeed in this business and to make it, and I don't see that improving or turning around anytime soon, unfortunately. I think that's bad for the game, and I wish that the people that are making decisions saw it my way. But ultimately, they have their own priorities, and they're moving in a direction that they feel is best.
Yeah, and to kind of, go to your points and different things you brought up there. I think the standpoint, though, is they really don't care about those fringe agents, and I think they've shown that with these decisions there. The problem is that if they don't care about the fringe agents, they don't care about the fringe players, because, it usually goes hand in hand. If you're a fringe agent, you probably get a fringe player. You're not a fringe agent, get a first-round pick. And I think the standpoint there is, some of these guys, these players, they've been multiple workouts, multiple, opportunities, there to, get that availability with, agents and guys who haven't had the opportunity to, sign first round picks and, players there. So I think really when you're looking at the ultimately, far as decision of the NFLPA to do this, it's a tough one. And I think we'll have to see what the SRA, says and how it's, put up there in regards to how you're looking at the standpoint of, hey, is it like the other SRAs before when it was 3%, 2%, 1.5%, 1%, and basically you initial those boxes with the player to say, okay, hey, this is what I'm willing to pay. But I think it does trickle down to the trainers, and I think they're going to have to basically kind of bite some of the bullet and take some of the risk with the contract advisor there as a whole, and really see how that's going to play out in regards to maybe more of a partnership than, hey, I'm going to pay you this X amount of dollars there, and you're going to do a service for me, and then I'm going to reap the benefits on a long-term reward there. So, and one thing you did speak about in regards to the NFLPA financial advisory program, I'll see. It'd be interesting to see how long that goes. And one show that the NFL has had a hard time with, HBO Ballers, the last couple of episodes, they've referenced the NFLPA financial advisor because The Rock's character, Spencer Strassmore, is a financial advisor. And I thought that's been interesting the last 2-3 shows. They're saying, oh, we're not registered with the NFLPA, program. So I think life imitates art sometimes there, but. Neil, I definitely think all those points you had made were valid there, and we'll see how it. Like I said before, we'll see how the SRA plays out. We'll see this, but I do think that we might see some guys get out of this business. If it's really hard to try to get that 3% there, and I think they really want to educate the players, especially with the rookies now that it's a slotting system. The thing I'd be careful about there is that when guys get released, an agent's got to go try to find those guys another job, and that's really the whole thing is the agents go get another opportunity. Peyton Manning got released,
mm-hmm.
So anybody can get released,
mm-hmm.
There. So,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. With about 5 minutes to go, some different things there that's kind of come up in the world. We've seen Joey Bosa. He's still kind of, in limbo there. Do we think we see any updates on that from what we talked about last week, Neil?
Well, I think there's only one issue here, and it's the offset language, and we've touched on that a bit on this show. I mean, ultimately, it's got to do with if you don't play out your entire 5-year career with your first team, and who has to fill the obligations of your signing bonus, and it's a bit more complicated than that, but ultimately that's what it's all about. And we don't normally see a contract dragged this far into training camp and even into preseason play, but we are now. And so we'll have to see where this ends. It doesn't look like it's going to end anytime soon. At the same time, if I'm Joey Bosa, I'm sure I'm more than ready to get going and really start playing, especially when you start to see the game start to play out and all those kinds of things. Don't have any privy. I'm not privy of any information there, but I would expect something, one of them to blink in the next week or so. I mean, we're starting to get into a situation where it's getting kind of late and being harmful to both sides.
And Joey Bosa's mom came out and said we should have pulled the Eli Manning with the San Diego Chargers,
yeah.
Which I thought was
a
little, unnecessary. what I've heard now is what they're arguing of is in regards to the signing bonus. Bosa wants it all this year, and the Chargers want to split out the signing bonus there. And really, on the team standpoint, they're looking at it as a cash flow, thing in regards to money in, money out there. And they're trying to, alleviate some of the cash flow problems, that they might have as a club and saying, okay, hey, we'll give you, 40% right now and the other 60%, in a year from now of your bonus, and Joey Bosa wants 100% of his bonus paid out right now is what I've been hearing. Is that really what's the final sticking point, on there? So
mm-hmm.
One other thing we wanted to mention real quick here, and it was something on E60 in regards to Trent Richardson, the running back, and how the family, kind of comes in an effect, really becomes a sucker of money, to that athlete. And Trent Richardson said, his family spent about $1.6 million in 10 months of his money in a bunch of Hulu and Netflix accounts and bottle service and, a lot of different things that, people don't understand that. That's where, some people come in. They're piranhas, and they prey on these guys in regards to when they have money.
Boy, I agree wholeheartedly. I thought the one thing that really stuck out to me is that he was paying his brother $100,000 a year to essentially be his brother. Boy, money goes out quickly when you're handing out six figures to family members who, basically because of, kind of lucky sperm clubs, shall we say. It's amazing how players are so unequipped to do this. And I'm sure that I presume that Richardson had financial counsel and he hired somebody to kind of help. And either that person struggled to say no or Richardson didn't listen to him. But here we are, $1.6 million is a lot of money to be gone essentially overnight. And unfortunately, given the way Trent Richardson's career has played out, there's not going to be another – $1.6 million behind it. So yet another cautionary tale for players that are hoping to be in Trent Richardson's shoes someday. Choose where you spend your money very carefully.
Yeah, and, I think, like I said, it's, the financial advisor, I mean, everybody plays a part in, okay, hey, you got to help these guys, you got to be accountable, on the standpoint there, and that's your fiduciary responsibility. So again, not saying that they didn't say no, but you've got to be able to try to say, hey, watch where your spending is, going there. So 30 seconds to left of the show, Neil. Anything exciting inside the league that you want to mention real quick?
Well, next week we'll try to catch up on our agent changes, always big reports for us. We'll be trying to track down all the players who've made changes in their contract advisor status over the last 3 months. And so it's a lot of work, but we're looking forward to boosting that out there next week.
Cool. Well, another great show, Neil. Look forward to talking with you next week, and have a great week of football.
You do the same. We'll talk soon.